Dana Carvey and David Spade here.
You might know our podcast, Fly on the Wall, featuring guests from across the entertainment industry.
We decided to do a spinoff called Superfly, and it's fun. It's just two of us riffing on current events, pop culture, catching up, impressions.
Joe, Trump's trying to be a dictator.
Yeah, just bump on the tater tots.
Joe, no.
Listen to and follow Superfly on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
And away we go, hour number three of our radio program. That's right, it is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. Most of the NFL world right now is at the NFL Combine in Indianapolis. So let's head to Indy right now and welcome in Eric Eager, our pal, who is the VP of Sumer Sports. He's kind enough to jump on board with us once again on CBS Sports Radio. Eric, appreciate the time as always. How are you?
Zach, I'm doing great. How about you?
Well, I'm doing fantastic. So we've been having a big show today in regards to Caleb Williams. What is your view of Caleb Williams? We all hear him get called a generational talent. When you evaluate him, your evaluation of Caleb Williams is what?
Yeah, I think that description is fair to an extent. I mean, I think that there are warts, for example, when you look at, you know, the way that he handles pressure. There were some games in college football last year, for example, the one against Notre Dame where, it went off the rails a little bit, but, I do think that when you look at arm talent and the things that these teams are looking for, as far as does he ever have every club in the bag as a quarterback, I think that he certainly has those. And so as far as going number one, to Chicago, whoever trades up for that pick, I think he certainly has the goods. He's not foolproof. He's not bust proof, but I do think he is certainly in that cluster of players who is in that like Trevor Lawrence kind of class.
So you're there in Indianapolis. You hear a bunch of this chatter. I think it's a lock that the Bears are going to take Williams at one and trade Justin Fields. I know Peter King, the great Peter King, who just announced his retirement in one of his articles, his last article, I guess, on Monday Morning Quarterback and Football Morning in America, said he believes, from what he's hearing, that the Bears are going to trade the number one pick and they're going to keep Fields. So do you think it's a lock right now that it's going to be Williams at one to Chicago?
A lock? No. I think that Williams – so I think Williams is very, very likely to go first. If you look at the markets, yeah, it's like minus 1,000 that he'll go first. Do I think Washington could trade up to go get him? Possibly. Do I think that the Bears would be smart to move back to two and maybe consider Jaden Daniels or Drake May and still move on from Fields? Absolutely. I think keeping Fields is probably the third best decision that they could make beyond just staying at one and taking Williams, trading back to two and taking the second best guy on their board, and then staying with Justin Fields. To me, it doesn't matter. The Bears have not necessarily given Fields the best as far as support is concerned, but that doesn't matter at this point. Like, you have to make the best decision based upon what the future holds. And even if Fields ends up being a $45 million quarterback, which is a, that's a pretty, eager estimate for him. That's what they're going to have to pay him, because that's what Daniel Jones is making. So would you rather have a guy that's maybe a zero surplus quarterback over the next 4 or 5 years, or a guy, even if, Caleb Williams ends up being a $35 million quarterback, he's going to make 10. And so you're going to be making $25 million surplus that you can go and go get another player like a Montez Sweat, or go get another player like a DJ Moore. Imagine adding another player to your stable like that to go and make sure that that player can have success. So much of what, we talk about with respect to Justin Fields, and before him, Mitch Trubisky, and before him, Jay Cutler, has been about support. And I can't imagine going and paying Justin Fields $40, $45 million just to make that support weaker and to make that argument again about the same quarterback.
So with what you just said, it's fascinating. You're now the second person in back-to-back days that we've had throughout this scenario where the Bears pass on Williams at one, maybe trade back and still get some in return for the number one overall pick and still take a quarterback. Like, let's say I make Eric Eager the GM of the Chicago Bears. Are you taking Williams at one, or are you maybe trading back to two or three, rolling with May and Daniels, trading Fields, and then still getting some stuff in return and getting a quarterback of the future?
I mean, you know, before I got into this world, like the seminal paper that I read was by you know, Nobel Prize winner Richard Thaler and Cade Mass, who's now a good friend of mine. The fact is we're not all that sure, and this research suggests that between one and two, like we think we know that Caleb Williams is definitively better than Drake May or Jaden Daniels, but we don't know. And the fact is that there's a team like Washington that's going to give you pick 40, a future one, and maybe a veteran player for the right, or for that certainty. And you get to say, okay, I'm going to maybe take Drake May, who on average is maybe 10% worse than Caleb Williams, but I get in return a pick 40, a first round pick next year, who, again, I could use that on a quarterback if Drake May is a complete disaster again, et cetera, et cetera. Like, that's the move that I make. I go to Washington and I say, look, like Cliff Kingsbury, Caleb Williams, I'm gonna dangle that in front of their faces and try to do that. And at some point, if you build up so much young talent around this quarterback with Sweat and with Moore and with all of these young players that they build up from the Panthers picks a season ago, it might not even matter that much the difference between Caleb Williams and Drake May because the talent around him is so vast.
Eric Eager here with us. So you rank May in front of Jaden Daniels, I'm assuming, just based off that answer, or do you put Daniels in front of May?
It's close. Daniels, his production last year, that season that Daniels had at LSU, is the best season of any of these quarterbacks in the whole draft, including Williams' 2022 Heisman season. The problem with Daniels is there's a metric called pressure to sack ratio. It's basically how often you take pressures and convert them to sacks. And his measure is going to be the highest of any first round quarterback that's ever been taken. And the stat that's really funny is, like, Patrick Mahomes, his mark is going to be coming out of Texas Tech was less than half of that. And his mark from college to pro is less than 0.1% different than it was Kansas City to Texas Tech. It's a very stable metric. And generally speaking, when a young quarterback comes into the league, he's coming into a league without a great offensive line. He's coming into a league and the game is really sped up. I need to have a quarterback who can avoid pressure. And Drake May is not the best at it, but he's 6% better at it generally over the course of his career than Jaden Daniels was. So I'm going to break the tie with that statistic. I don't think that they're that far apart. I think that Daniels has a ton of ability, but he is going to have to break a statistical mold that not many quarterbacks have broken, including Justin Fields, who had many great accuracy statistics and a lot of other things going for him. But when he was at Ohio State, was very mediocre at converting pressures to sacks.
Eric Eager here with us. He's at the Combine. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio, does a great job, VP of Sumer Sports. So we know Williams, May, and Daniels will all be first-round picks. How many more quarterbacks do you think end up going in the first 32 picks? The other day, I said it will be four. I think Michael Penix is better than J.J. McCarthy, but I don't think Penix will be a first-rounder because of the injury history, and I think McCarthy will find a way to fall in the first round.
Yeah, I think that's sharp. I think by the time you look at the betting markets, they'll probably make the market 5.5. And historically, betting the under on that has always won. There's always that quarterback that sort of trails. Even in the year when it was Lamar Jackson and Josh Rosen, the betting market was actually expecting Mason Rudolph to get into the back end of that first round, and it ended up Lamar Jackson barely getting in. So I think they'll put the market at about 5.5, and I think J.J. McCarthy probably will get in, and then it'll probably be a Bo Nix, Michael Penix, and I think we'll both be surprised that a team is not going to be willing to go up and grab the fifth-year option on that player because it's not worth as much now that the new CBA of 2020 makes that fifth-year option a lot more expensive. So I do agree that it's probably going to be about four, and I would think it tops out at about five. I don't think it's as deep of a class as people believe.
So we had a big conversation the last hour. One of the producers around here, Ryan Hickey, who I know who used to be my old producer, he suggested that the Bills should trade Josh Allen to the Bears, and the Bears would give him the first overall pick in the draft and the 9th overall pick in the draft. He's getting dragged on Twitter for that suggestion. I understand why, and he should be dragged. But it elicited the conversation of how many quarterbacks are untouchable in a trade for the number one overall pick. I had six. Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, obviously, Joe Burrow, CJ Stroud, and I did still throw in there Lamar Jackson and Justin Herbert. How many quarterbacks do you think would be untouchable in a deal for the number one overall pick to go have Caleb Williams be your next quarterback?
Yeah, throw the contracts out just because Justin Herbert's contract is not tradable, for example. And I think that that's the number I would go in. But one more name I would add, and maybe I wouldn't, but there's one name that's interesting. How close is Jordan Love to that conversation?
He was one that we threw out there. And also Jalen Hurts, who outplayed Mahomes in a Super Bowl 2 years ago and then had a year this year down the stretch. Love, the reason I ended up going still with Williams is because as good as Love was down the stretch, I just think Williams has a higher upside. But you go back to the Jordan Love draft process, no one said he was Patrick Mahomes, but they were like, he could be 40 or 50% like Patrick Mahomes. And you know this, Caleb Williams is the closest prospect that we've had compared to Patrick Mahomes. So I just think as a prospect, Williams is like, not the right term to use here, on steroids compared to Jordan Love a little bit.
Which just shows you the uncertainty of this whole process. Yeah. Jordan Love is a mid-20s pick. Patrick Mahomes, the 10th pick, picked 8 picks after Mitch Trubisky. Like, we're talking about, of course, the first overall pick as if, he's some certain thing. And yet the guys who we're all talking about in the pros, it's like Patrick Mahomes is 10th overall pick. Josh Allen's a 7th. Justin Herbert's a 6th. Lamar Jackson's a 32nd, et cetera, et cetera. It's so funny. And again, if you're thinking about, whether or not the Bears should trade pick number one, I think that is more evidence that maybe you should consider the best quarterback in a draft is not always the first one that's taken.
And the craziest part too is I don't even think Caleb Williams is the best player in this draft. Like, I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is the safest thing in this draft. And if I had to put my money on one player being a Hall of Famer from this draft, it's Marvin Harrison Jr. for me, and it's not even close.
Yeah, and I think Arizona, if it gets to that pick, and I do think New England does trade out of that pick and let the first team that the team that wants a quarterback that's a better built team is going to trade up for that third pick. But if it gets to Arizona, I think Marvin Harrison to Arizona is the biggest lock of this draft from a betting perspective. But yeah, I think you're right, and he does seem like the most polished wide receiver prospect we've seen since Ja'Marr Chase.
Talking to Eric Eager for a few more moments on the Zach Gelb Show. He's the VP of Sumer Sports. What are your thoughts on Brock Bowers? Had a great college career, but I'm not going to lie, I saw him in person without pads on at the Super Bowl, and I was like, that doesn't look like the guy that I usually see that's on television. I was underwhelmed by Brock Bowers.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest part of the combine now, that not a lot of guys do the three cone and not a lot of guys bench and all that. Like, I just want a height and a weight on a guy now. Like, if he's 6'1¾" and I know you're in the Northeast. Like, if he's Garrett Mills size, like, are we talking about a guy that's going to be picked in the top 10? And with Kyle Pitts, the situation with him a few years ago where, he was generational, but he hasn't really lived up to it. And, the history of first round tight ends, let alone top 10 tight ends, being what it is. I think if he slips past the Chargers at 5, like, I don't know who's going to trade up and actually take him. So it's going to be an interesting one. I could see, as far as ranges in this draft, other than, a guy like Pete Penix or another guy like Bo Nix and J.J. McCarthy, like, I think of the position players, he has the widest range. I think he could go from 5 all the way down to like 18 in this draft, come April.
So wide receivers, we know Roma Dunze is highly touted. We just you just heard what I had to say about Marvin Harrison Jr. Neighbors is also a big prospect as well. But everyone keeps telling me how deep this wide receiver draft class is. After those three guys, who are some of the other guys that you are really inclined to maybe use an earlier pick on in the NFL draft?
Yeah, McConkey out of Georgia is an interesting one. The Georgia receivers haven't always done. I mean, Pickens did okay. He's had his ups and downs. Mecole Hardman was not necessarily, I know he caught the game winning touchdown in the Super Bowl, but he wasn't necessarily the greatest for Kansas City. But McConkey has a lot of traits that I think are different than some of the guys that have come out of Georgia in the past. I know my former colleague, Mike Renner, just came out with an interesting comp for him. And I think that, it's going to be, Interesting, near the back end of the draft there, but I've sort of, enjoyed what I saw out of his tape, and his analytics have looked pretty good. Right now it looks like he's being mocked kind of in that 30 to 35 range. So depending upon, whether you are a team like Kansas City that wants to shore up a receiving core that kind of held them back and made it difficult for them to win the Super Bowl, or you're a team like Carolina who that's going to be your first pick at 33. It's going to be interesting to see where he lands. And for him, I know for McConkey, it's going to be, he's probably praying it's the former and not the latter.
So I got two more for you. Russell Wilson and then Justin Fields. Where are they playing next year, in your opinion? Where would you like to see them play next year?
Well, I think with Wilson, it's really interesting because does he swallow his pride and go to Minnesota on a one-year, like, minimum value deal, stick it to Denver? Any deal that he takes is going to offset with Denver. And so if he goes somewhere on a minimum, deal, he's still going to get all of his money from Denver. And then he's going to benefit the team that he goes to on a minimum value contract. So if he goes to Minnesota, plays with Justin Jefferson, maybe he could look really good. Kevin O'Connell's done a really good job with Kirk Cousins over the past couple of years. And a passable job with guys like Josh Dobbs and Nick Mullins and so forth. So I think Minnesota as a bridge to maybe JJ McCarthy, or if the Vikings trade up and take Jaden Daniels, that could be a possibility there. I think for Fields, the natural one is the Falcons, but I think the Falcons are going to be heavy in on Kirk Cousins. So I think Pittsburgh's kind of the next one. Go there, with the Najee Harris's and the Jalen Warren's, and kind of, build that run game with an offensive line that had a really good second half of the year. When you look at Harris's efficiency, they really came on as an offense, not because Mason Rudolph was anything special, but because they were able to actually move the line of scrimmage down the stretch. That's kind of the ingredient for Justin Fields being a plus player at the quarterback position.
Last thing I'll ask Eric Eager, the VP of Sumer Sports. So I remember in the summer when we had you on, and you were talking about the Texans, how they could be better than what people think. And the Texans were not only better than what people think, then a whole lot better than what people thought, making the playoffs and winning a playoff game. I know we haven't seen the draft unfold yet. I know we haven't seen free agency get underway yet. Is there a team maybe right now that you're already starting to have a little buzz about how you think their offseason's going to play out?
I think you have to look at Arizona. And I'm maybe going to be a little bit more long-term there, but you have 13 picks. You have a decent amount of draft capital. I think that could be the – Marvin Harrison, you get him in the building. Already have Kyler Murray. There's some of the formula that Detroit had, where you have a veteran quarterback who's a former number one overall pick. You have a coach who I think has a clue. The way in which they beat Philadelphia with the onside kick, there's very clearly some strategy in that building that you like. And they're going to be able to build it, I think, from the ground up. And that division, when you look at Seattle, LA, I think LA was punched above their weight class certainly last year. Seattle is going to be breaking in a new coach. And San Francisco, every single year, San Francisco is either going to be in the NFC Championship game or better, or they're going to lose 10 games. That's empirical. So I think that there's a path for Arizona to eventually be pretty good in that NFC West. And whether it's the Detroit path, where it's a couple of years before they're good, or it's the Houston path, where they're good almost immediately after putting a bunch of draft picks in place, it remains to be seen. But I like what Arizona's doing.
Make sure you check out Sumer Sports. He's the VP, Eric Eager. Eric, always great to see you. Thanks so much for doing this.
Zach, thanks for having me on. Take care.
You got it. Eric Eager joining us on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio, live from Indianapolis, the site of the 2024 NFL Combine that is underway. All righty. We will take a timeout. When we come on back, there have been some grades from the NFLPA about coaches and owners. I'll give you my biggest takeaways from that when we return.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it, with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. So this is the last show for me this week. Off Thursday, Friday, heading to Puerto Rico tomorrow, early in the morning. So there will be no Zach Gelb Show PSA tomorrow. Can I just give you my PSA, though, what it would have been? I'm going to do that right now, Samter. I think you're going to find this one to be funny because it comes at the expense of your boy. Last night, went out for dinner, and I'm walking out of the restaurant, and right outside the restaurant, very good restaurant, very good meal, I stepped in dog poop. And it wasn't just like a little dog poop. This was a lot of dog poop. If you have a dog, and it would be one thing if this was like a Tootsie Roll size poop and you leave it on the sidewalk. But like, I for a second thought that this was, it could have been in the city. I thought this was like human poop for a second. After you like maybe had a Delta 9 Brian Munchie special. Seriously. And you had to maybe go take a number two. I couldn't believe how much dog poop I stepped in last night. What is wrong with people? Your dog takes a deuce. You gotta pick it up. And this was so much poop that it may have been tough to pick it up. You have to at least make an effort. I was so annoyed, and I was wearing nice shoes last night. And it was right when you stepped outside of the restaurant, and it was raining too. I had to go into the gym of my hotel, of my apartment when I got home. And there is a like a steam sauna area and a bathroom area. And I had to just, I wasn't bringing the shoe in my apartment. I had to run it under the sink water just to get some of the poop off. And then I ended up taking a toothbrush and had to scrub the rest of it off. Instant night ruiner. I had such a great evening last night. And I'm leaving the restaurant, and I step in, like, this dog must have been King Kong, for crying out loud. I couldn't believe how much dog poop I stepped in last night. You have a dog, and I used to have a dog. I love dogs. I'm thinking about adopting a dog within a year. You know, that's something that's crossed my mind. But how could you be that inconsiderate to not pick up your dog's poop? Like, sometimes you run out of a bag or something like that, okay. But this person clearly saw the poop was too big and didn't want to pick it up. And there have been a lot of times now, and I've noticed this more than ever, where I'm walking around the city, there is so much dog poop in the city right now, and I can't tell, it's like a daily occurrence. And not just once, like multiple times a day, where I'm able to evade the dog poop. And you come very close to stepping on it, and you just step right over it. But last night, unfortunately, the dog poop got the best of me. Ruined my night.
As a dog owner, there's few things that upset me more than irresponsible dog owners.
And you have a small dog, right?
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I've seen a photo of your dog. Think of your dog just as poop. That's how big the poop was last night on the streets of New York City.
I'm just going to tell you this. One, if you get a big dog, you're prepared for them having big dog, you know, big poop.
Sure.
So that's not an excuse of like, oh, there's a lot of poop. They're used to picking up a lot of poop. And if they're not doing it, I'm seeing it all over the streets too. It's unacceptable.
Gross.
Sometimes it'll be like in a flower bed where there's more like soil around. And so it's a little bit more acceptable. But then my dog
right
goes
in
the poop. And then my dog steps in it, then I step in it when I'm going to pick up my own dog's poop. So I'm all about just, you have to pick up your dog's poop no matter what. It is unacceptable, especially on the concrete. What I will tell you is this.
Hey, wait, hold on. Are you about to give me a butt on dog poop? Are you about to make this my fault somehow?
No.
Okay,
no.
Good.
No.
Because I would say I was just going to walk off set and you host
yeah,
the show
no,
for
no,
the next
no.
30 minutes.
I'm going to be much worse than that.
Uh-oh.
I can just tell you from visual confirmation and experience, it's not always from a dog.
Oh, no. Trust me. I thought that this could have been from a human last night.
Yeah. So I have seen that around the city enough,
mm-hmm.
Either in person or
yeah.
via security camera or whatever.
But here's why I think it was a dog. It was right in front of the restaurant. And this is a nice restaurant. If a person walked over there and unzipped their pants and took a number two in front of the restaurant, I think we would have seen it. I think someone would have seen it. There's a maitre d' standing right there in front of the window of the restaurant. This was definitely dog. It may not have been. I really hope it was.
And if it was, like, that's my first addendum to this conversation. But if it was a dog, it's unacceptable. They should be prosecuted by the law. I'm not talking about getting them a ticket. I'm talking about arresting them, putting the dog in a temporary, you know, hotel for dogs. It's not the dog's fault.
It's not the dog's fault.
No. Put the dog, forget about, like, not a shelter, not a cage. We should have, like, dog hotels around the city. And whenever a dog's owner doesn't pick up their poop, the dog goes to the hotel, lives a lap of luxury while the owner suffers in prison for a few days. And then the owner learns their lesson, picks the dog up, and has to deal with it the next time.
And clean my shoes.
Yeah, and they should be responsible for the bill of cleaning your shoes.
I want new shoes.
There it is. I'm in.
It was disgusting.
Yeah, I'm all, as a dog owner, irresponsible dog owners drive me crazy, especially in the city.
Ack, have you realized this? You've been a longtime city liver here in New York City. Have you realized more dog poop these days on the streets?
No.
Really?
No.
You must not get out a lot.
There's, I don't.
there is a high increase of dog poop.
And he's also not in Manhattan.
My line forms to the left.
Ack, you're not in Manhattan, Ack?
I'm not in Manhattan.
Oh, okay.
I'm in Brooklyn.
Gotcha.
But I don't see it either place. So.
Well, maybe I need to move to Brooklyn then.
Yeah, there because you go. A tree grows in Brooklyn.
In Manhattan.
Plenty of places for the dogs to go.
It is just disgusting.
The one thing I will say is around 345 Hudson, where we are.
It is a good area.
It is a good area, and I've walked my dog and seen a lot of people walking their dogs in this area. Mm-hmm. And they're very good about cleaning up after themselves. So ACT probably is not witnessing what you and I are seeing on a daily basis.
And I live in Financial District, which is a good area. It's not, you see it there. Last night I was in Midtown, though. Like, where you live, Samter, you're in Kips Bay?
Yeah, it's like Kips Bay. It's a very residential part of the city.
Yeah, and there are some younger people in that area.
Very young area.
So,
but
so
oftentimes,
if you tell me,
it's not the young people who aren't picking up. It's the older people who aren't picking up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, I've noticed it. I've witnessed it multiple times, and I yell at people. Like, if I see it, I don't walk by quietly. I walk right up to them, and I and sometimes I'll hand them a bag, and I'll say, pick up your damn dog's poop. And I won't say poop. I'll say other things.
Yes, you'll say,
but
yes.
I get right in their face because there's no excuse, right? The only excuse is, you know, I can't find, for me, if I ever am without a bag, I look for a leaf, I look for a napkin, I look for something. I'll find another dog owner and ask them for a bag. So there's really no excuse, but at least if you forget that you don't have your bag on you and you're like, crap, I don't know what else to do.
Well, there's no excuse because, like, when you go to the bathroom, you make sure that there's toilet paper in the roll.
Yes, however, we've all been in the situation where you sit down and, oops, there's nothing there. I've had a situation where I walked out with a bag and the bag fell out of my pocket. And here or sometimes I pick up the poop after my dog and he goes for number two. So okay. Now I'm out of bags and I'm like, well, I wasn't expecting this. So now I'm kind of scrambling. But I always make sure it's picked up. Even if I have to find a napkin on the street or use something or walk to a restaurant and get a bag or something. But I always pick it up.
Yeah, no. Last night was a rough night. And it's one of my nicer pair of shoes. And walked right out of the restaurant.
Luckily, it comes off.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's annoying, but it comes off.
Still, though, today, it gets in your head and you think you're smelling it because you smelled that vile smell last night.
Go get a cheap toothbrush and just do like a quick, you know.
That's
like
what I did. I used two toothbrushes last night. I just got an industrial size pack of toothbrushes, two of them I use to clean off the shoes because some dope let their dog poop on the, and I'm hoping it's
and
a dog.
And just make sure that you, you know, got rid of those toothbrushes. I mean, I've seen people like swap things
not
around by mistake.
To the neighbor.
I mean, your teeth look a little bit discolored today. I'm
just
going to say.
Oh, no. I threw them in the trash. I threw them in the garbage room. Please, come on. All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. What a show this has been today. Well, come on back. NFL PA grades have been out for coaches and owners. There's a few surprises. We'll get into that on the other side. Update time first. A man that avoids the poop in New York City. And I'm very jealous of him. He is the great Richard Ackerman. It's time to answer Ask the Pros question of the day. It's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Will in D.C. says, Zach, which head coach right now in the NFL would you least want to play for? You can submit a question by tweeting at CBS Sports Radio, at Zach Gelb, using the hashtag Ask the Pros. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. I think my answer may surprise some people. The coach that I would least want to play for right now is actually Robert Saleh. I'm talking about active NFL head coaches, not people that just got fired. Robert Saleh has no control over his locker room right now. Like, it would be one thing to say, oh, maybe that's why you would want to play for him, because it's easy and Robert Saleh does everything for the players. But if I'm trying to win, and that would be my objective, I don't think Robert Saleh can be a head coach of a winning football team. And I'm not saying that we can't live in a world where you have a player-friendly coach, because you can. But you can't be a doormat. Like, Dan Campbell's player-friendly, he's not a doormat. DeMeco Ryan's player-friendly, not a doormat. Robert Saleh is a doormat. And even though that could be appealing to a player because you could walk all over your coach, that doesn't create a winning environment. So I wouldn't want to play for Robert Saleh. So the NFLPA had their, I guess it's their second annual coaching and owner survey. And these are from coaches and owners from this past season. So the A-plus coaches were Andy Reid, Dan Campbell, and Kevin O'Connell. And Andy Reid, great coach. Dan Campbell, great coach. Kevin O'Connell is player-friendly. And you could really understand that the players respect him. I know they didn't have a good season this year, but they had Justin Jefferson hurt, and they had Kirk Cousins hurt as well. I was a little bit surprised by the A-list here. Sean McDermott. There was a lot of controversy there this past year. But I guess Sean McDermott didn't lose that locker room. Zach Taylor, not surprising. Samter, here's one that's surprising. Mike McCarthy. Now, if you're highly graded by the players, I do wonder if that's sometimes a bad thing. Like, for Andy Reid and Dan Campbell, it's a good thing, right? They have the results. But this was another year where a Mike McCarthy team wasn't prepared for a playoff game. Like, how much of this list has to be taken with a grain of salt? Because if you are a little bit tough and you run a tighter ship, that may not result in the best grade here, because it's not necessarily the most player-friendly environment. So just because the coach is really highly graded here, Samter, I don't always know if that's a good thing. For Mike McCarthy to be in the A-list here, I don't think that's a good sign necessarily.
I mean, I think the way that these coaches are viewed by the players and how they're viewed by us is just, I think this is very telling. Mm-hmm. We wonder why Mike McCarthy keeps getting chance after chance after chance after chance, and maybe this is why. You know, you talked about this a lot, especially with Nick Sirianni. You want a coach who's player friendly.
Which, by the way,
yep.
Nick Sirianni's also an A-list coach. I'll give you the A's real quickly, and I'll let you continue. McDermott, Taylor, McCarthy, McVay, Mike McDaniel, Nick Sirianni, Tomlin, Shanahan, Carroll. On that list, I would not want to play for, or I don't think McCarthy should be employed right now. I don't think Sirianni should be employed right now. Just on that list.
Right, and so what you say with Sirianni often is you want a player's coach who's not someone that you can walk all over, yeah. And that kind of seems where Sirianni is. I don't think that McCarthy gets walked over, at least not by the players. He probably gets walked over by the Joneses, for sure. But he seems like a guy who players respect and like. Whether we as the media like him or respect him or think he's a good enough coach.
McCarthy is a likable guy. He's a man's man. Yeah,
but there's a difference between liked and respected, right? Like, Sean Payton is probably respected because he's won a title. I don't think he's liked by a lot of people.
That's fair.
Right?
I'll say this. I think McCarthy is well-liked and well-respected in that locker room.
I think that's all you can ask for as a coach.
Nick Sirianni, I think, is well-liked. I don't know if he is
respected. 100%.
Because there was no order in that locker room. None.
100%. And that's why I think Mike McCarthy keeps getting shots, because they have all these exit meetings every year, and I'm sure the players are like, dude, he's awesome, and you're getting results. They're just not winning in the playoffs. So that's why McCarthy is still around, because he's a player's coach who's respected by the players, and that outside of just winning games, that's the most important thing as a coach. Be liked, be respected, and win.
Now, A minuses. Jonathan Gannon, Sean Payton, which is surprising what we just said, Brian Daboll, Doug Peterson, Shane Steichen, Frank Reich, DeMeco Ryans. Frank Reich got fired in season, first year on a job, and he ranks at A minus. You know what that shows me? David Tepper's a disaster. An absolute disaster. The players could vote the coach as an A minus. He gets fired first year on the job. I'll have to look where Tepper did rank. I'll do that in just a second. B plus coaches. Harbaugh, LaFleur, Vrabel. I think all three are excellent coaches. B coaches. Eberflus, Brandon Staley, and Robert Saleh. Oh, who wants to play for Saleh and Staley? B minus, Stefanski, who I like. Belichick, Dennis Allen, Todd Bowles. Now, I think when this story was first put out there, everyone's like, oh, Belichick got a B minus. That's pretty damn good. But look how many coaches I've listed before we got to B minus. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27. That's 27 coaches before we get to B minus. That's wild. That's a lot of coaches. Arthur Smith was a C+. Ron Rivera was a C. You want to know who was the lowest rated coach? Josh McDaniels, to no surprise. Now, let me give you owners here. The A+ owners were the Dolphins and Vikings. So Vikings, highest rated owner level, highest rated coaches. Eagles were an A, Broncos, Jaguars, Ravens, Packers, A. Bills were an A-, Niners were an A-, Arthur Blank, A-. B+, look how quickly the Texans have turned things around. The Texans are now B+. New York with the Giants, Chicago, New Orleans, the Raiders, and Tennessee. B, Jerry Jones, the Browns, and the Commanders. B-, Lions and Jets. C+, Bengals, Rams, Seahawks, Chargers. The Colts were a C. This is one that's surprising, Samter. Robert Kraft, a D+. I'm shocked by that. Like, Robert Kraft is one of the legendary NFL owners, and he's very friendly with Michael Rubin, and they're nowhere close in age, and you see how many players that Robert Kraft hangs out with. I'm surprised. And a lot of it is because people think the Patriots need some upgrades with facilities. I'm surprised that Robert Kraft was a D+. That's shocking to me.
And he seems likable. But let's also remember, like, this Patriots roster, like, we think about the Patriots who won titles.
Oh, they're terrible
roster. There's only a few guys on this roster who were with any of those teams that won a title.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard for this current roster to kind of look at Robert Kraft and like, if you were to ask the Edelmans, the Bradys, the Welkers, the Richard Seymours, the Wilforks, they're going to heap praise on Kraft. This current roster probably doesn't know that Kraft very well. Plus, Kraft has been embroiled with his own legal stuff, winning. But I'm just saying that
the rub and tug situation that was going on in Florida, that was years ago.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is these players haven't seen that part of Robert Kraft. He was probably around a lot, hanging out with Tom Brady, dancing and partying, winning championships. They're seeing probably a different or maybe even a more distant Robert Kraft. So who knows?
David Tepper, the only surprise here is he's not the lowest ranked owner. He was a D. There were four owners that were below David Tepper. The Glazer family was a D-. Surprised by that. The Steelers, the legendary Rooney family, they were an F. The Cardinals, I could understand it with Michael Bidwell. Talk about controversy. He's been embroiled in a lot. Here's the biggest surprise, though. This was an F-. I didn't even know they went this low. I thought if you just got an F, that was it. The Chiefs. The Kansas City Chiefs. Clark Hunt. Lowest-ranked owner. That's stunning to me. And I was reading, because, you know, it's a long article, so things get aggregated, that the players wanted improvements in the locker room. And all he did, because of a shortened offseason after winning a championship, was, like, give them new chairs. Think about Kansas City. Do we ever hear a negative thing out of Kansas City? Andy Reid, jolly friendly environment. You have the best quarterback in the game. You have one of the more popular players in the game in Travis Kelce. And the team that has won back-to-back Super Bowls and has won three Super Bowls since 2020, excuse me. February 2020 when they won their Super Bowl. They're the lowest ranked owner? Santa, how does that one make any sense? Sometimes it just shows you when you win, there's sometimes sacrifices. Some guys don't end up getting paid, right? When you have all these guys and they have to go elsewhere. But, man, I'm just shocked. If you would have said who's the lowest ranked owner on this, I would have said without a doubt it would have been David Tepper. There are four owners in front of David Tepper. The Bucks, surprising. Steelers, surprising. Kansas City, surprising. Cardinals, not that surprising. I'm shocked about the Chiefs having the worst ranked owner.
And we don't hear anything negative about the Hunt family. You know what I mean? Like, there are owners that we hear negative things, so I wouldn't be surprised. Like, if people were negative about Jerry Jones, I wouldn't be all that surprised. If people
players
were negative,
like Jerry Jones, though.
What? Oh, sure. I'm just saying, like, we hear a lot of things about Jerry, good and bad. So we don't hear anything about the Hunt family. We don't hear anything good or bad about the Hunt family. So it is very surprising, especially when teams are winning and guys, maybe guys aren't getting paid. Maybe there's a lot of guys who were cut from the Chiefs, were like go by the Chiefs or traded or whatever, who feel a certain way because they're no longer there. Like the Tyreek Hills or the Juju Smith-Schusters who kind of got, you know, unceremoniously let go. Maybe they feel a certain way,
but that shouldn't be enough
shocking.
To be less.
I mean, they've won three Super Bowls in 5 years. The team is happy. Everyone seems good. The head coach was the number one rated head coach. That's my team. How could you rip my owner? I don't get it.
I'll put on the Chiefs hat here. That's ridiculous. Clark Hunt, you want to give me $1 million? I'll come play for your franchise tomorrow. All right. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Today was an interesting show. The 4 p.m. hour went off the rails a little bit, but in a good way. Big thanks to Maggie Gray, Hot Take Hickey stopping by, Eric Eager, the VP of Sumer Sports. Big thanks to Stu Botcher and Moist Mike as well, each and every one of you. I'll be back on Monday. Robin Lundberg tomorrow, Amy on Fridays. I'm off to Puerto Rico. We out. Bye-bye. Peace.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.